remember that it must soon leave the kin for budding. The message flashed inward toward the elders, glimmers of blue and green flickering through the vast formation. Once again, Leviathan pondered why the elders insisted that members go off alone to bud. That makes us vulnerable to the darters, Leviathan reasoned. It would be better to stay within the formation, protected against their slashing, insatiable teeth. Many members of the kin never return from their buddings, Leviathan knew. Why do the elders insist on risking our members so? They say the symmetry demands it. They say that it has always been so, thus it must always remain so. Leviathan wondered why. Could it be that those members who budded successfully, who fought off the darters and returned to the kin, made the kin stronger? The weak fed the darters. The strong returned to the kin. But of what good is that? Leviathan asked itself. Once a member returns to the kin, it is safe from the darters. The predators never attack the kin in all its strength. They would be destroyed if they tried. The symmetry. Everything we do is intended to maintain the symmetry. That must mean that the darters are part of the symmetry. A new realization shocked Leviathan's consciousness. Does the symmetry require that we offer ourselves to feed the darters? Does the symmetry demand that we sacrifice members of the kin to keep the darters among us? How could this be? Leviathan wondered. Why don't we protect our own members against the darters? Why do we allow them to kill our own kind? Is it to make the kin stronger? To get rid of the weak ones? Sacrifice individuals for the good of the group? Leviathan considered that possibility with loathing. Why don't we attack the darters? Why do we allow them to feed on us? We could kill them all, and then the world would be safe for the kin. We could bud in peace and safety once the darters are eliminated. That would alter the symmetry, it is true. But what's wrong with that? We could make the symmetry better, safer, stronger. Leviathan wished it were close enough to the elders to show them this idea. At its present station, out on the periphery of the kin's formation, messages had to be relayed inward from one member to another before they reached the elders, and then the elders' answer had to be relayed back. If we could show them my thoughts directly, display my ideas to their eyes without others in between, perhaps we could convince them. Perhaps we could make them see the rightness of our concept. A world without darters. A world without fear, where we could bud in safety and grow in numbers without limit. Leviathan wanted to break free of its station on the kin's periphery and swim deep into the formation and confront the elders directly. But such insolence was unthinkable. The elders would have nothing to do with such an upstart. And besides, the urge to bud was building within Leviathan's member parts. Soon it would be irresistible. A blind, unreasoning urge that would blot out all other thoughts, all other needs. Instead of swimming inward toward the elders, Leviathan knew that very soon it would have to leave the kin and face the ravening darters. Alone.
Catherine Westfall's quarters. Rodney Devlin looked properly humble as he was ushered into Westfall's sitting room by the cadaverous, dark-suited aide who served as her personal secretary. His shaved scalp gleamed as if it were polished with oil, while Devlin's lean, lantern-jawed face seemed somehow to be almost mocking behind his red moustache, despite his lowered eyes. Westfall nodded to the aide, and he silently left the sitting room, sliding the door shut without a sound. She was wearing a simple lounging pyjama as she sat on the room's comfortably upholstered sofa. Devlin was in his usual white working clothes, rumpled and stained, looking altogether scruffy. "They're off on their journey into the ocean," she said, as the erstwhile cook crossed the carpeted floor toward her.
"You fed her the nanos?"
he asked, his voice low and respectful, his chef's floppy hat clutched in his hands.
"At the party, when you gave them to me," Westfall said. "They should start to work on her within a few hours, from what you told me."
Devlin nodded mutely.
"And then they'll go to work on the others," Westfall added, "which will be the end of their mission, and the destruction of Dr. Grant Archer and his scientific minions." A puzzled expression on his mustachioed face, Devlin asked,
"Why are you doing this? What have you got against Archer and those people in the submersible?"
"That's my business," Westfall said coldly. "You can be glad that you're not going to jail. That's enough for you to know."
"Yes'm."
For several heartbeats, the room was silent, Westfall eyeing Devlin like a cat watching a mouse, Devlin standing there waiting for her next words. At last she said,
"Tell me about this man, Mozaraiwa."
"Zeb."
Devlin's face showed surprise.
"He used to be director of this station."
"I know that. He's been something of a mentor to Archer over the years, hasn't he?"
Shrugging, Devlin replied,
"I suppose so. Kind of like a father figure to him, almost. Grad was just a young pup when he first came here, you know. Zeb took him under his wing, so to speak."
"If Archer is relieved of his position as director of this station, would Mozaraiwa take the job again?"
Devlin puzzled over that question for a moment. "Tricky one, that," he said to himself. "Why is she asking? What's she after?"
"Well?"
Westfall demanded.
"I don't think so," Devlin answered. "Zeb's got an endowed chair at the university in Cairo, and he's a high mucky-muck at Selene University. I don't see him coming back here."
Westfall nodded, satisfied. Devlin got the feeling he had just saved Zeb Muzarewa's career, or maybe his life.
Linda Vishnevskaya checked the mission profile displayed on the leftmost screen of her console against the actual performance of Faraday. The two curves overlapped almost perfectly. To the image of Dorn in her central screen, she said, "You should be breaking through the clouds in 6 minutes." The cyborg nodded solemnly. 6 minutes, he repeated. "All systems are performing within nominal limits." Vishnevskaya glanced at the color-coded lights running along the right side of her console. All green. "The ship is running smoothly," she agreed. "Please, congratulate Dr. Jaeger for me." Dorn asked, "Would you like to speak with him?" Fighting down the impulse to smile happily, Vishnevskaya said tautly, "Yes, for a moment." Dorn turned away from the screen and called to Jaeger, who slid into view on the display. "Everything is going well, little father," she said, dimpling into a smile despite herself. Jaeger looked slightly embarrassed. "So far, so good," he muttered. "How do you feel?" she asked, quickly adding, "The medical team is monitoring your physical conditions, of course." "I feel okay," Jaeger said. "Kind of chilly in this soup, but I guess we'll get warmer as we dive deeper into the ocean." "Yes," Vishnevskaya studied Jaeger's face. He seemed normal, despite the perfluorocarbon they were immersed in. Perhaps his face was a little puffy, but the medics claimed that was to be expected. "Well," she said, I just wanted to wish you good luck before communications cut off. He nodded.